to do with Estelle's disappearance. He wasn't even here. And Sarah left him the first night of the cruise, and she left him that note in their cabin. Peter flinched. I pushed on. What's the end game here? What happens now? An American is dead. The FBI is coming and what? All the evidence points to me, so I can take the fall. How does that work in your grand scheme? Is it because I'll protest my innocence by telling them everything? That I'll have to convince them that there's a serial killer murdering women aboard the Celebrate, because if I don't, it'll be my freedom that's at stake. Have you done this to me so I'll have no choice but to make them listen? Where will you be? Waiting in the shadows to find out the truth? Is that your plan? Is it, Peter? Is it? Peter's legs crumpled beneath him and he sank to the floor. He put his face in his hands. I'm so sorry, Adam, he said through his fingers. I'm so sorry. Oh, don't apologize to me. It's Megan's family you should be apologizing to. Shit. Oh, God. Oh, shit. I started pacing. Peter, you've killed an innocent woman. Do you realize that? Do you even realize what you've done? You're just as bad as he is. This man, this monster we've been searching for. Do you get that? Do you get that you've made Megan suffer just as much as Estelle did? That you've taken an innocent life just so you could find your wife? Jesus Christ, Peter. I don't know. What the fuck were you even thinking? I'm so sorry, Peter said. He took his hands from his face. His cheeks were wet with tears. I'm sorry, Adam. I thought she was American. What? But she was American. I stopped. No. The champagne bottle in my cabin. A cabin registered in Peter's name. A perk that was only for returning passengers, Megan said. She didn't suffer, Peter said. I made sure of it, I promise. She didn't suffer. I did it quick. I don't think she even knew what was happening. I'm so sorry, Adam. I am, really. But I thought she was American. I thought it because he was. The passport started trembling in my hand. No. I looked down at it, at the note. I'm sorry, E. Just like mine, except for the initial. I'm sorry, S. If Peter had written it, if he'd just made it up to get my attention to forge some link between his missing wife and my missing girlfriend, then how did he know what to write? I thought she was American, Peter repeated, because he was. How could he possibly have known what it was that my note, Sarah's note, said? No. The cabin interior blurred in front of me as my eyes filled with tears. I'm so sorry, Adam. I'm so sorry. He was. So, who was, Peter? I knew the answer, but I wanted to hear him say it. I wanted there to be no mistake. Because who was? Peter looked up at me, his face streaked with tears. Ethan, he whispered. Ethan. I don't remember walking out onto the balcony, but I ended up there, looking out over the dark sea. This was the starboard side. The hills of Nice were hidden from my view off beyond the Celebrate's stern. The tiny village of Villefranche was a mile behind me. All I could see was a seemingly endless expanse of dark sea and above it, darkening sky. I gripped the rail with both hands, gulping down deep breaths, trying to slow my pulse, trying to think. Peter killed Sarah. And he killed Megan, too. All in the search for Estelle. I felt his presence behind me, his hand on my shoulder. "Please, Adam, let me explain." I swung around in a fury. "Explain! Explain why you murdered my girlfriend and then pretended you wanted to help me find her killer! Use me for the money to get on this ship so you could kill someone else! An innocent woman whose only crime was having an American accent!" "I couldn't."
Tears ran down Peter's face.
"I couldn't go on, Adam. I just couldn't. Not with that monster out there who had taken Estelle. I nearly ended it all. That was true, what I told you. But then I read this newspaper article that talked about the US Congress passing a law so American citizens would get the FBI, and I thought, FBI, they're the experts when it comes to serial killers. If anyone can find him, they can. I needed them to come to the ship. I needed them to come to the Celebrate. Once they started investigating, once they started looking back, they'd find Estelle. I knew they would. Even though she was British, they'd have to investigate that too, because they'd connect all the disappearances from the ship. They're the only ones who would."
"Tell me," I said. "Tell me what you did." Peter hesitated. "Tell me!" I said again.
"I was on the Celebrate with Sarah, behind her and Ethan in the boarding queue. I heard him talking about how she'd be on her own that night because he had to meet someone. His accent, he was obviously American. You'd be surprised how few of them you find on European cruises, especially the very short ones like this. When they go to the trouble of coming all the way over here, they want to sail for a week or two. I thought she was American too. Really, Adam. Otherwise, I never would have..."
"I don't give a fuck," I said, biting my lip with the vehemence of the F. "Tell me what you did to her!"
"I followed them." Peter talked faster now. "Well, I followed her. I stayed at a distance so she wouldn't notice. That's why I didn't hear her speak. She met up with him afterwards, out on deck. They looked like they were arguing. She went back to the cabin alone. I waited outside. When she opened the door to come out again, I pushed her back in."
Peter was crying hard now.
"And I had a... I'm sorry, I am. I had put some chloroform on a napkin like you see in the movies."
I thought of Sarah, eyes wide with fear, a hand clamping a piece of white cloth over her mouth and nose.
"She was unconscious in seconds," Peter said. "She didn't feel anything. I know that. I did it as quick as I could, and I told her."
An anguished sob.
"I told her I was sorry. I told her I was doing it only because someone else had done it to the woman I loved. Some monster had taken the woman who was carrying my baby, my child. I pulled her out onto the balcony and then...
He looked away from me.
Then I heard a noise.
No, I said. No.
It was Ethan coming to look for her. Their balcony was the same as this one.
Peter pointed to the exterior wall between the frame of the sliding door and the next partition. There was a space, 2 or 3 feet, where a person could stand and not be seen from inside the cabin.
I hid there, holding Sarah, waiting for him to leave again. He did. Then I pushed her.
Another sob.
I pushed her, Adam. I'm so sorry.
I put one hand back on the railing and gripped it until my knuckles were white. What then? I asked through clenched teeth.
I took some of her stuff, but not all. Just like Estelle. Everything had to look the same. I saw the note on the mirror on the way back in. I took it because, well, Estelle didn't leave a note. It was only afterwards I realized that Sarah's phone was in her handbag. I'd taken the handbag. I was going to throw it away, throw it in the sea when I disembarked. But then all these calls and texts started coming through. And your message and all the numbers had Irish country codes. I checked online and I found something on Facebook. An appeal for information. That's when I realized she wasn't American at all. She was Irish.
He straightened up. Looked me in the eyes.
Adam, I know I should never have...
So then, I said, you went to Plan B.
No one believed me about Estelle, Peter said. No one. Blue Wave didn't care about Estelle or Sarah. You told me they said Sarah got off the ship, right? Well, she didn't, did she? We know that for sure. They just told you that to mollify you. This is what they do. So then I knew that despite what they said, Estelle hadn't walked off the ship either. I was convinced more than ever. Someone had murdered Estelle. Maybe the same person who had killed Sanna Vray. Who Blu-ray didn't give a shit about either. I knew I still had to try to get the FBI onto the ship. They were the only ones who could solve this, who could find him and stop him. Who could tell me what happened to Estelle? I'd made a mess of things, yes, but there was still time to set things right, to do this right. But I had no money left. I couldn't get on the Celebrate to... I looked you up online and it said you'd just signed this big movie deal or something. 6 figures, it said. You were rich. And your girlfriend was missing from the Celebrate. I figured if I could convince you beyond all doubt that Sarah and Estelle were connected. So I found Sarah's passport in her bag, and I put the note I'd taken from the mirror inside and posted it to you.
The wind had picked up. I turned away from it and leaned back against the railing. Peter was standing in front of me, leaning on one outstretched arm against the sliding door. He removed it now, straightened up. His hand left a smudge of moisture on the glass. How did you know where I lived? I asked him. Peter looked surprised that I didn't know the answer.
You're in the phone book. I looked it up online.
Then you, what, waited for me to contact you? I might never have.
I thought of that, Peter said. I actually sent you some messages through the Facebook page, not under my own name, of course, bringing up how similar the two cases were. You mustn't have seen them. I waited a while, thought maybe you'd stumble upon it yourself. If not, I was going to get in contact with you. Perhaps I'd stumbled on your case. Anyway, I needn't have worried. That woman Sarah met at dinner led you to Blue Wave, and then you did your own research and you found Estelle's case. You got in contact with me and... You pretended that Estelle had sent you a note too, I finished. There was a pause, filled with the whistling of the wind. Yes, Peter said eventually. But you'd written it. Becky had Estelle's passport. It was never missing. She gave it to me. I had some stationery from the Celebrate from the time with Sarah. I thought you were going to figure it out, Adam. I did. There was the logo change. I thought you might ask why Estelle's paper was the same as Sarah's. They should have been different, right? If Estelle was on the ship a year ago and Sarah was here last week. But you said nothing about it. Then when I swapped over the keys, that was the other thing. I didn't realize that return guests get a bottle of champagne in their room. A check-in, even, back in the terminal. I thought something might come up and the girl would say, "Welcome back, Mr. Brazier," and I'd have to think of some way to explain that. And then Ethan. I found Ethan that first night. I kept looking until I did. And he told me it was his first week working on the ship. And I knew then that if you found him, he'd tell you the same thing and it would all be over. It was nearly over anyway. You wanted to leave. So I delayed you, made you stay. And then last night, I had to see this thing through to the end. I had to take Megan. To take Megan. He made it sound so small, so unimportant. A simple task. An errand. The scarf, I said flatly. Was it even Sarah's? Peter bit his lip, shook his head. No, he said. I threw her clothes overboard. Got rid of them before I disembarked from the ship last week. But I remember the scarf. It was easy enough to find another one like it. It was from a high street chain, and I remembered the perfume. That was my backup plan, in case, once we got aboard, you changed your mind about all this. I glared at him. Seems like you thought of everything. I'm not proud of it, Adam, but yes, I've tried to. I've had a year to think of nothing else. Except Megan died in your cabin. You swapped the keys over. Your name is on my cabin. If you killed her there... It doesn't matter, Peter said. You're the one who's been seen with her. We're undoubtedly caught on CCTV, seen chatting with her in the bar, maybe even seen going into your cabin with her. I'll tell them, I said. I'll tell them what you did. Honestly, I don't care if you do. I just needed to get Megan to a place where I could do what I had to. Say what you like. So long as it's the FBI asking the questions and they're on their way here as we speak. When they arrive, they'll arrest you. You can tell them all about Megan and Sarah. In fact, please do. Then they might make the connections. Do what no one else has ever done. Actually see what's happening on this ship. Peter looked past me, out over the sea. I don't care what happens to me. I just want justice for Estelle. And for that to happen, Megan must be connected to Sarah, and Sarah must be connected to Estelle. She's the only one I care about. You're a nice guy, but I don't care about you. I can't, and I couldn't care about Sarah. It all happened so fast. I saw hands on Peter's chest and realized they were mine. I was gripping him, pulling him by the shirt, turning him around, pushing him up against the balcony, bending him back over it.
"You're not going to do this, Adam," he said. "This isn't you."
I looked at him and thought about what he had done. I saw Sarah, eyes filled with terror, wondering what this man who was whispering apologies to her could possibly have to do with her life. And something just boiled over inside me. I couldn't keep it in, couldn't let it go. I couldn't forgive him. Then Peter was gone over the balcony. And in that instant, I realized what I had done. I shot out my arms to catch him and screamed his name, but there was only air. And then I was on the railing, standing on the first rung, then the second, looking over, and then...
Corinne. Just after 2 o'clock the next morning, Corinne's son stood in the doorway of her crew cabin. "Hello, Mama." She invited him in, motioned for him to sit down beside her on her bed, the bottom bunk. There was nowhere else in the tiny space for him to sit. "You know," she said, "you're the only one left who can call me that. Mama, I mean."
"Mickey got pneumonia?"
"Over Christmas, 2003.
I read about it online."
"How did you hear about Papa?"
"On the news," Romain said. "I was still in France then."
"Where have you been since?"
"I went to Crete."
"Why did you leave there?"
Romain turned to look at her and then she at him. He said,
"How do I know that you're not recording this?"
Corinne laughed softly.
"Why would I bother with the police now, Romy? There's no one left to protect. Mickey, Jean, Charlie. You took them all out, one way or another. There's only me left. And God has already handed down my sentence."
"What is it?"
"Cancer in my liver and my lungs. 6 months, they told me, 8 months ago. I can't have much time left."
"How long have you known I was here?"
"A few weeks. I got the email back in July. I was going to come aboard as a passenger, but then I realized that if you were crew, you may not necessarily be in passenger areas. Even if you were, it might take years of me walking loops around these decks, waiting for the one time that I, one of 2,000 passengers, might happen to run into you, one of 1,000 crew. I don't have that kind of time. So I applied for a job instead."
"But how can you do it if you're sick?"
"I just had to do it for long enough, and I've managed that, haven't I? How did you know I was here?"
"We make the new crew ID cards. I saw your picture come up last week, then your name. You use your real name still?"
"What other one do I have? I'm not like you, Romy. I'm no master criminal. I wouldn't even know where to get a fake passport, let alone have the nerve to use one."
"Mama."
He stopped.
"What?" Corinne said. "Is this the part where you deny everything?"
Romain's hands were in his lap. He looked down at them.
"I didn't kill Jean. Really, Mama, I didn't. I mean, yes, it was probably my fault. He was climbing over the gate trying to get away from me, but I wasn't trying to hurt him or anything. I wouldn't have. I just wanted to talk. If Papa... If he did what he did because he felt guilty, then I can't be responsible for that.
Why would he feel guilty?
Because he lied to me. In the prison. He said he was going to bring me to live with him when I got out. But then he changed his mind.
What about Mickey? She asked gently. Was that an accident too?
I didn't want to hurt him. I was only trying to get him to stop crying.
Are you sorry for it?
Yes, Romain said after a beat.
And Bastien, are you going to claim that was an accident too?
I wasn't much older then, but no, that wasn't an accident.
I didn't think so.
There's a darkness, Mama. It comes in. I can't stop it.
Was it always there?
A pause. Yes, Romain said.
What about Saint-Nefris?
His jaw clenched. How do you know that name?
Did you kill her, too?
I said, how do you know that name?
The person who emailed me, Corinne said. He was a friend of hers. Worked with her here, on the ship. Was working with her the night she disappeared. Saw you harassing her at the bar, he said. After you were asked to leave, she told him who you were. Said you were the infamous Devil of Deauville, the child murderer known as Boy P. He'd never heard of you. She didn't tell him your new name, but he took what he had to the authorities. They didn't follow up. I believe the company said she was drunk at a party and fell overboard. He didn't believe that, but he couldn't do anything about it. Then, a few weeks later, he's sitting eating his lunch in the crew mess when he looks up and sees you there, in uniform. He knows there's no point in going to Blue Wave. He doubts the French police will believe him. And anyway, I don't think anyone is too concerned with hunting you down there anymore. He looks up your new name in the crew directory, sends it and an updated picture to me. He watched my videos, you see. After Sanne disappeared, he learned everything about you. The old you, I mean.
She paused for breath. So what?
Sanne?
I did kill her, Romain said.
Why?
Because she killed our baby.
She was pregnant?
Tears sprang to Corinne's eyes.
Oh, Romy. Was she your girlfriend?
Back in Crete, yes.
Did she know?
That's why she did it. She was afraid it would be like me, and that she would be like you.
Corinne couldn't speak.
It's not the same, I know, Romain went on. Your situation, that was different. But even though I knew that the child could be like me, I still wanted it. I wanted to take the risk, because it could have also been like Sanne. More like Sanne, if we tried hard enough.
I tried, Romy.
How hard?
You don't know how difficult it was to look at you.
But I was just a baby, Mama. How could you blame me for what he did?
Because I thought...
Corinne bit her lip.
because I thought you were like him. I was afraid you were. Your father was a monster, Romy. He raped me repeatedly for hours. He cut me inside.
Romain flinched, looked away. She could see his jaw working.
I remember looking into his eyes at one point, and there was nothing there. Nothing. No life. His eyes were just like little dark marbles. I didn't tell anyone because I wanted to forget that it had ever happened. That was the only way I could go on. And your papa? How could I tell your papa? How could I put those images in his brain?
Corinne shook her head.
No, I couldn't. So I said nothing. And then I found out I was pregnant with you. Pregnant with the seed he had forced inside me. Pregnant with what was going to be a living, breathing reminder for the rest of my life of what happened to me that night. I could never forget it, because it would always be there, running around my house, sitting at my dinner table. But what choice did I have? It was too late to take care of it. The only other option was to ruin Charlie's life, to break his heart. I loved him too much to do that to him, so I said nothing at all. The man who... your father... his colouring was a lot like Charlie's. I thought I might get away with it. And I did, at least until you started taking after him in other ways.
But which came first, Mama?
Oh, Romy, the things you did when you were just a boy. Do you remember? Hurting animals, walking around like a robot, copying Jean, and then Mickey.
You told him, didn't you?
Who?
Papa. That day he came to see me, just before I was released. When he told me that he and I weren't going to live together anymore. You had just told him, hadn't you?
Yes.
There was no point in lying now.
He was talking about getting the family back together. All of the family. He went on and on and on. Finally, I just cracked. I screamed at him. I told him that his family was already together. He could gather us all in one room right then and there.
What did he say?
Not much. He was upset. He left. I didn't see him for a couple of days. But when he came back, when he was a bit calmer, he told me that on some level he had always known.
Corinne sighed.
He said we were all going to live together again. All of us. His...
She glanced nervously at Romain.
His real family. We'd move somewhere new. Without you. Move on with our lives. Have the life our family was supposed to have before I walked down that street that night. But then Jean died. Charlie went 6 months later. Mickey is gone now too. Did you know that he wasn't your father?
Not until the day you came to the prison.
Yes, well, after you were found guilty, I thought there was little point in keeping any more secrets. You didn't suspect before?
No.
Never?
I didn't really think about it.
But the darkness,
Did you not wonder where it came from?
I thought it was inside of everyone.
Have you hurt anyone else?
There's been some fights. I worked in a bar for a long time. People get drunk, say stupid things, but aside from that, no. I haven't killed anyone else.
But you came back to work here. Why?
Because no one came for me after Sun. Nothing happened at all. It was almost like it had never happened. So if the darkness comes...
Romain looked away.
This is a safe place for me to be.
Don't you want to resist it, though? Don't you want to be good?
Romain shrugged.
It's not about what I want.
Tanner, she said. Did any of it work?
I thought it did at first. But over time I realized that I could do what he told me, act like he showed me, and yet, underneath, I was still the same. He couldn't test that, couldn't see what was inside me. He couldn't see into my head. He just thought he could.
You were faking.
Basically, yes.
Tell me one more thing.
Corinne took as deep a breath as she could manage.
When you murdered Bastien, do you remember how it felt?
Why do you want to know that?
I just do.
It felt good, Mama. Like I'd been sitting in the same position for a really long time, and I'd just got up and stretched. Like all this stuff had been building up inside of me, and then someone opened a vent.
It was a relief, you mean?
Yes.
Is there something building up inside you now?
No,
Romain said. Corinne didn't believe him.
Well, Romy,
she put a hand on his arm. They hadn't touched since he was a boy of 11. She would take the opportunity now while she could.
The past is over. There's little future left. I just wanted to tell you that I'm sorry. My decisions weren't your responsibility. You were just a child. I shouldn't have blamed you. I should have tried harder with you. Tried to love you. For a long time I told myself that I couldn't love you because of what you were. But maybe, if I had loved you, I could have changed who you became. But by God or me... Didn't you make it so damn difficult?
Next to her, Romain nodded silently.
I know, Mama, and I'm sorry. So what happened?
He stopped abruptly, looked down at the knife sticking out of his side, blinked in the light reflecting off the blade. He looked back up at Corinne, eyes wide in bewilderment.
Mama?
I'm sorry for this, too, she said. But I have to do it.
She pushed the knife in farther. Blood pushed its way out of Romain's lips and trickled down his chin.
I shouldn't have brought you into this world, Romy. So before I leave it, I'm going to take you back out.
Corinne pushed the knife in the rest of the way, to the hilt, tried to twist it, felt it meet resistance, a bone.
I don't care what happens to me, she said, but I doubt anything will. There's a reason I didn't wait for you to go ashore on a day off, or finish your contract and travel somewhere else. I came aboard for the same reason you did. Because out here,
You can end someone else's life and get away with it.
Romain was still looking at her, but she didn't think he was seeing her anymore. His eyes were unfocused, glazed.
This, I've realized, is the only way. It always was. I just wish I'd done it sooner, before you took my family from me. Mickey, Jean, and that poor boy Bastien. That girl, Sanne, the life that was inside her.
She stood up and went to sit on Romain's other side, the one that didn't have a 10-inch butcher knife sticking out of it, or a pool of wet, glossy blood sinking into the sheets. Then, Corinne did something she had never done before and would never have the chance to do again. She put an arm around her firstborn and pulled him close, and she waited for him to die.
Adam. I jumped before I had decided to. Air whistled past my ears as I plummeted toward the sea, dark but for the panes of moonlight breaking into tiny shards on its surface. At first, I seemed to be moving in slow motion, and the surface seemed miles below. Then I was rushing up to meet me, faster than my mind could follow. I had to find Peter. I had to save him. If I didn't, he and I would be the same. A fragment of a memory. Hitting water from this height is just like hitting concrete. I tried to straighten up, to grip the back of my thighs with my hands, but I was too late. I hit the water at an angle, and every nerve ending on the left side of my body was set ablaze with white-hot pain. I closed my eyes. When I opened them again, I was underwater. It was nowhere near as dark as I expected. My shoes had come off, and now, beyond my bare feet, was blackness. But above my head, just beneath the surface, it was brighter than it had appeared looking down. It was clear, too. I could see no dirt or fish. But I couldn't see Peter, either. Was Sarah down here, too? I thought about it. If he had pushed her into the water late on the first night, where was the ship then? Miles and miles and miles away from here, surely. It would only have just left Barcelona. She might be in the same sea, but she was nowhere near me. All I wanted was to go back to her. Let her come back to me as she was planning to do. Now I knew for sure I would never be able to. As I looked up through the water, the hull of the Celebrate loomed to my right. The lights of the Oceanic and Atlantic decks twinkling, tinny music drifting down. I started to sink. Pressure began to build in my chest. I moved my arms to swim toward the surface and... fuck! A red-hot poker of pain deep inside my shoulder joint. I must have dislocated it with the force of the impact. My lungs felt as if they were about to burst. I had to take a breath. I moved my legs. They felt all right. I started kicking, propelling myself slowly to the surface. But I had never been a strong swimmer and I went nowhere fast. I saw a familiar shape bobbing on the water. A life ring. Someone must have thrown it in. Who? Had someone seen us? What had they seen? What if Peter was still alive? What would he tell the FBI when they came to question us? Would he still try to blame me? Would he tell them I had pushed him off? The bloody scarf was in his room, but Megan was all over mine. He had killed her on my balcony. I had spent half the day with Megan, unwittingly building the case against me, collecting witnesses for the prosecution. I needed to get out. I needed to survive. I needed to be sure I would be around to tell them my side of the story. I kicked faster toward the life ring, my lungs feeling as if they were ripping apart, the pain in my shoulder making me want to scream out, my muscles burning with exhaustion. I punched through the surface. Coughing and spluttering, I opened my mouth to suck down as much air as I could. I was alive. I was okay. Where was Peter? I was close enough to the life ring to reach out and touch it, but when I gripped it with my right arm and threw my left, hanging limp, the elbow at a disconcerting angle over it, it started to flip. I realized it was providing only assistance, not rescue, and that even though I was already exhausted, I had to keep my legs moving to keep my head above water. Looking at the life buoy now, up close, I saw that its color was faded, its surface scratched and ripped. A chunk of seaweed was wrapped around its rope, and the rope itself was frayed and unfurling. No one had thrown it in. It had been here already, floating in the sea. No one had seen us. I looked around, turning, scanning the surface in all directions. I saw nothing but the white foam of breaking waves. Then, faint in the distance, I heard it for the first time. Phum, phum. I knew the sound. I just couldn't remember what made it. I saw something maybe 15 or 20 feet beyond my left arm. A dark shape bobbing on the surface. Phum, phum, phum. The noise was getting louder. Watching the shape, I caught a glimpse of short brown hair. Hair I knew was a lighter colour when it wasn't soaking wet. It was on a body floating face down in the water. It was Peter. Dead. I let out a sob. Peter was dead because I had pushed him over, because he had killed Sarah, because he had loved his wife. Should I go and get him? Try to save him? Was it already too late? Would it do any good? Phoom, 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 phoom. A glare so blinding that for a second it seemed as if the sun had shot up into the sky. But the glare moved, and I could see the dark shadow above it. A helicopter. That was the sound. The FBI had come for me. No, wait. They couldn't possibly have gotten here by now. I had just gone in the water a minute or two ago. It must be the French Coast Guard, come from Nice to help look for Megan. Instead, they had found me. Phoom, 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 phoom. It was directly above me now, the helicopter, blowing waves out from the centre of its downward blast, splashing water up in my face. The sound was thunderous, tunnelling through my brain, pounding in my chest. I couldn't see Peter's body anymore. It was drifting away, the spray making it impossible to track its movement. I had to decide what to do. Should I let Peter go? Should I pretend I knew nothing? I could say that I fell, or jumped. Grief had driven me to it. Grief? The FBI would ask. Grief over who? My girlfriend, I would tell them. Sarah, my girlfriend. She disappeared from the ship nearly 2 weeks ago. After she did, a man contacted me. I came to meet him in Barcelona. We boarded the ship. Yesterday we met Megan, the woman who was reported missing this morning. They would know what to do. The helicopter's beam had stopped on me. They could see me. They knew exactly where I was. A rope ladder was dropping down. But what about Peter? His body bobbed in the dark water somewhere just beyond the light. They hadn't seen him yet. I felt the grip of a hand on my arm and turned to find myself face to face with a man in a wetsuit, wearing a thick mask over his face. He was saying something to me. He looped an arm around my ribcage and I stopped having to kick, stopped having to keep my head above water. Just as well because I didn't have the strength anymore. If I was going to try to save Peter, I had to tell them now. Or maybe not telling them was saving him. Saving him from the things people would say, the things they would think. If I said nothing now, no one would ever know what he had done. I could say he disappeared while we were on the ship, that I climbed into his cabin to look for him, but he was gone. There would be no trial, no justice for Sarah or Megan. But what would it change if there were? They were gone, and they weren't coming back. The man responsible was floating, most likely dead, in the sea, not 50 feet from me. A red basket was being lowered on a cable. The man in the wetsuit shouted something at me, but I didn't understand it, so he moved closer, shouted it again, right into my ear. Is there anybody else in the water? I wouldn't be like Peter. I could never be. I had pushed him in a fit of rage, but then I jumped in too. I had intended to save him. I hadn't meant to do what I had done. But he had. He had planned to kill Sarah and Megan. Did you see anybody else in the water? Did you go in alone? We had reached the basket and another man in a wetsuit. Together, they lifted me up into it, securing me with webbing and carabiners. I was facing the night sky now, the stars swinging before me like a cosmic pendulum. Sarah was gone forever. I knew that now. Somehow, I would have to learn to live with that. To live without her, to move on. To pick up the dreams that had cost me so much. That had cost me her. I would have to learn to live with that. Did I believe there could be a way? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I turned my head toward the man in the wetsuit and nodded. Were you alone in the water? Did you see anyone else? Above me, the helicopter's rotor spun. Vroom, 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 vroom. The pain in my shoulder was unbearable. I started to shake. Where is she? Now I knew. Knowing was enough. It would have to be. No, I said finally. It was only me in the water. There's no one else. The man in the wetsuit nodded. The basket began to rise. Adam, 6 months later. We arranged to meet in a bar in Gatwick South Terminal. I had a couple of hours to kill before my afternoon flight to Los Angeles, and Becky had said it wouldn't take her long to drive out from the city. I got there first and took a seat facing the doors. When she arrived, I recognized her straight away. She looked just as she had in her Facebook pictures, short and soft, with dark eyes and caramel skin, only here in the flesh, solemn and nervous instead of happy and smiling. She was bundled up in a heavy wool coat, scarf and gloves. As she peeled off the various layers, we talked about the bitter January cold and how lucky I was not to have tried flying out a couple of days before when the runway got snowed in. We ordered coffee and joked awkwardly about how awful it tasted. I asked Becky about her job and explained why I was travelling to Los Angeles. To go to meetings, I said, which I was really excited about until I found out that that's basically all anyone does there, all the time, and rarely does anything come out of it. Still, they're flying me out and putting me up in a hotel, and the sun will be shining, so... And how are you? So many things were different now, in this afterlife. That question was one of them. Before, it was just good manners, a polite inquiry. A flippant, fine thanks, and you? Was all anyone expected in return. But now, people actually wanted to know how I was. Well, I'm seeing someone, I said. When I saw the flicker of surprise cross Becky's face, I added, a therapist, I mean, once a week. Becky waited for a PA announcement about unattended bags to finish before she asked, is it helping? I don't know. I looked down at my cup and noticed a little smudge of jam on the inside of the handle. We hadn't ordered any food, and there was no condiment on the table. I pushed it away. I thought it would be more prescriptive, I suppose. Like, he'd tell you what to do, how to cope. But he just sits there and listens. Back when I was in college, Becky said, my older brother died. Suicide. I'm so sorry. People didn't know what to say, so they'd just go with variations of time heals all wounds. Everyone kept telling me that the longer I waited, the less it would hurt. I nodded in recognition. I've been hearing that a lot lately, with the occasional, "At least you're still young," thrown in. I wondered sometimes whether these supposed well-wishers could hear themselves speak. "They were wrong," Becky said. "It's been almost 15 years now, and it just feels like it did the day we found him. But the thing is, it does get, not better exactly, but easier, even though it hurts just as much. A grief counsellor at my university said it's like when it first happens, you fall into a hole of grief. You can't do anything. You don't want to do anything. All you can do is focus on the next 5 minutes, or the next hour, or just today. Then, over time, you suddenly find that while you are pulling yourself through time in these little increments, you also manage to climb out. The hole is still there. It always will be. But you learn to live around it. You can. You will. Yes. Well, I looked at my watch. It's just after 11. She should be here by now, right? Becky didn't call me on my blatant change of subject. I'll call her, she said instead, picking up her phone. There was a pause while the call connected. We're here, she said into the receiver. Where are you? Okay. Well, we're upstairs in the Wetherspoons. The stairs by Marks and Spencer's. You know where? Okay. See you in a sec. She ended the call and looked at me. She just got off the train. She'll be here in a minute or two. I took a deep breath in, let it out slowly. It'll be okay. Becky put a hand on my hand. You'll be okay. What am I going to say to her? Trust me when I tell you that she's more afraid about what she's going to say to you.
Why?
Because she thinks this is all her fault. Don't be ridiculous, I said. She had to do what she did. The way Peter acted afterwards, everything that happened, it only proves that. That's what I've been saying to her. Peter did this, no one else. I know. A pause. And I hope you know that too, Adam. I raised an eyebrow. Meaning, that email you sent me, right after you got back to Cork, it sounded like you were blaming yourself for Sarah being on that ship.
It was my fault she was on that ship. If I'd been better to her, better for her, if I'd kept my promises, she wouldn't have gone looking anywhere else. She wouldn't have started something up with Ethan. And so she wouldn't have been on that ship.
But, Adam, you can't. But what I realized is that the ship wasn't the problem. Sarah should have been able to get on it and get back off it again in one piece. She should have been able to come home. It shouldn't have been a dangerous thing to do. It was Peter who made it that way. It was Peter who did this. It doesn't matter what the chain of events was that led up to him doing it. He could have stopped at any time. So I can't blame myself. I won't. And she shouldn't either.
Well, Becky said, that was a good speech.
It was, wasn't it? I smiled. Sometimes I even believe it myself.
Regardless, I think it would mean a lot if you said that to her, that you don't blame her. She's been struggling ever since it happened. She didn't ever imagine for a second that he'd be like he was, that he'd go to those lengths just to...
I didn't hear the rest of Becky's sentence because I was looking over her shoulder at the woman who had just arrived in the bar. She was standing in the doorway, her head turning to search the crowd. The long, glossy blonde hair was gone, replaced with a mousy brown colour and cut clear of her shoulders. Gone, too, were the stylish, expensive clothes I'd seen her wearing in pictures. She was wearing jeans, sneakers, and a brightly coloured winter jacket of the kind skiers wear. A squishy-looking bundle was perched on her hip. a toddler so well insulated against the winter weather that his arms and legs stuck out like the rays of a starfish. Only his flushed face was visible. One mittened hand was reaching for his mother's hair while the other gripped a toy truck. She saw Becky first. Then her eyes came to rest on me. I will admit it. I did feel, just for a second, a beat of resentment. What if she hadn't stayed for as long as she did? What if she had never married him? What if she and Becky had come up with a different escape plan? What if, after it became clear that he wasn't going to stop until he found her, she had contacted him somehow and told him the truth? Sarah would still be alive. But then I caught myself, corrected myself. She would never have had to do any of this if it weren't for Peter. This was nobody's fault but his. She started walking toward us. I pushed back my chair and stood up just as Becky turned and saw her. She stood up too, hugging her friend and whispering something in her ear. I thought it might be the same thing she had said to me. It'll be okay. You will be okay. The toddler squealed. Hello, Christopher, Becky said brightly. Do you want to go for a little walk? She took him in her arms. Come here and we'll go for a little walk. Let Mummy talk to this nice man for a minute. Then we were alone. I don't know what to say, I admitted. She shook her head. Neither do I. How about we start with the basics? I stuck out my hand. I'm Adam. It's good to finally meet you. I was surprised that you wanted to after... Oh. She suddenly remembered my outstretched hand and grasped it. It's good to meet you too, Adam. It really is. I'm Estelle.
This concludes the reading of Distress Signals by Katherine Ryan Howard, copyright 2017 by Katherine Ryan Howard. This book was read by Alan Smith, Bronson Pinchot, and Suzanne Torin. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Blackstone Publishing and was produced in 2017 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.